broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, as well as in the evening on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Right off the bat, we've got Jack Rice with us. Jack Rice is the best criminal defense attorney in Minnesota, hands down. JackRiceLaw.com, JackRiceLaw.com. That's where you can find him. He's our expert in legal issues as well as intelligence issues. And for the people in Chicago, you get to see him a lot on Court TV. He's on Court TV quite a bit, and he's great on Court TV. So if you're looking for Jack, go to Court TV, ask for Jack Rice, and you'll find him at some point, as he's always offering great commentary on some of the cases that they're covering. Jack, thank you very much. I appreciate the time as always.
Are you kidding? It's great to be with you.
Thank you, sir. I want to go through, we've got such a litany of legal issues with Trump and where things are going. I hope you don't mind us taking a few minutes and just kind of, I want to get your opinion on, as best as you can, on some of this stuff, because the reality is he's desperately trying to put this off. He's hoping that he wins the election, and that if that's the case, he can pardon himself. In the case of Georgia, he's hoping to get, and we'll start with that, Fannie Wills to get kicked off that case, get it sent to a different county. They dismiss it, and that goes away. He's working really hard. What they're trying to do down there, of course, is obviously discredit her, saying that she wrongly benefited from a relationship she had with a coworker, where they're saying that she basically was taken on luxurious trips and stuff like this. That whole court case going through, it basically, they never produced anything. They're still waiting on the ruling here. But, you know, from what you know about this, I mean, really, I mean, did you hear of anything really that was going to knock her off this case at this point?
Well, you know, Matt, the really frustrating part about this case is that actually the Georgia case was quite strong. If you think about what it was they were trying to accomplish. Now, remember, what they did is they were prosecuting former President Trump and 18 other people, some of whom have already pled guilty to this, with election interference, but more importantly, election interference in Georgia. So it was actually Georgia law that applies. And that's really important for two different reasons. One reason that it's important is because if Trump becomes president again, he can't dismiss that case. He can't essentially give himself immunity and say it's over. It's a Georgia case. Georgia has the power to prosecute that case. That's number one. And so here we're stuck with that. But the other one is this, is that what Georgia has is something called RICO. The feds have RICO too, but Georgia has a series of RICO statutes that's really like it's on steroids, because what it does is it allows you to prosecute this as an organization, and you can even force statements and testimony and language from those who didn't commit crimes that fill in the gaps that show that this was a criminal enterprise. It was a huge deal. But what Trump has done so successfully is he's diverted the attention of everybody, because what they've done is they've turned all of this on Fannie Willis. And they're basically saying what she did was she hired her boyfriend to be the lead prosecutor in this case, paid him a whole bunch of money, which was really odd and strange, and it objectively was, and then he took all of that money and spent it with her later. So it looks like it was a bit of a shell game, and it's a really frustrating thing from my perspective, because frankly, it's a pretty solid case, but you spend so much time talking about Willis and her boyfriend that you forget that there's a whole bunch of evidence, including from a bunch of Republicans who say what Trump was doing was not just outrageous, it was criminal.
Mm-hmm. The problem with Willis is not that she was dating a coworker. That's okay. There's, you know, it might not be ethical in some states, but it's not a problem in Georgia for her to do that. The problem is did she benefit financially? Yesterday, someone made the point in a political hearing, there was a political hearing with one of Trump's lawyers in this case, saying, are you saying to me someone who's making $200,000 a year somehow is they're doing all this to get $2,000, $3,000 vacations? And she basically didn't really have an answer for that. the reality is and they had plenty of people testifying that she paid with cash, that there was no, you know, advantage she had here. There didn't seem to be a lot of evidence, but my wife actually was the one that brought this up, Jack. She said, I mean, am I crazy, or is it just how are you that dumb to get into a relationship with someone in that situation in the first place?
Exactly. You see, now that's the problem here. What's frustrating from my perspective is that this was a pretty clean prosecution. And what you do in this case is you take your personal life and you blow everything around it to pieces. And as a result of that, it makes it very, very difficult. And you serve this up on a silver platter for Trump and his team to tear her down. The potential is this, is that this could actually force her out. You could force this into a different county, and you're going to get another prosecutor, and that other prosecutor could just as easily, if you get it to the right one, and it's a lot easier when you get outside of Fulton County, you get it to Cobb County, some of the others, you're going to get somebody who might actually be on the Trump team.
Yes.
Or somebody who would actually defer in this particular case and dismiss it outright, and it would be over. That's what's huge, frustrating. I've spent a lot of time in Atlanta doing all the court TV stuff. I have a lot of friends who are working on the inside of this. And that's the frustration for a lot of people who are down there right now, because they work so incredibly hard. And what they feel like is they feel like this is idiocy, that we put ourselves in this place where all we're doing is talking about Fannie Willis and her boyfriend.
Isn't it fair to say, though, that even if she didn't date her coworker, which once again, technically is not wrong. It doesn't look great, but it's not wrong. But no matter what, the Trump team would have found something, because as you pointed out, the whole goal is to get this out of Fulton County and get into a different county.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of it. But you shouldn't make it so easy.
Yeah, that's
right?
Exactly.
And also the other part, it's not just, honestly, it's not just the fact that she's dating her boyfriend. I mean, and he's the lead prosecutor. The real question of this, and by the way, this went to the Board of Ethics in Georgia. They actually dismissed it outright. They say, we don't have jurisdiction over this. This doesn't matter to us. This is an irrelevant question for us. But the problem is, was he the boyfriend of hers before she hired him, which makes it look even more murky? And the money that came in is pretty big money, and it's not tracked particularly well. So it looks like it's dirty money. You see, this is another example of sort of stupidity where you think, come on, you're prosecuting the most litigious person in the United States who has been fighting these kinds of dirty fights for a half a century. And what you do is you take your lead prosecutor and you tee it up so they can tear you to pieces and never even talk about the fact that he was strong-arming a whole bunch of people in Georgia, including the Republican Party, with the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, and just about anybody else they could get their hands on, to actually do something to overturn this. Because remember, it wasn't just about what was going on in Georgia. Remember when they flipped two senators? This was also about Georgia, because it's those small numbers, Georgia, Arizona, as an example, that really made the difference in the election.
And by the way, when the only person that said they were dating before this case started has basically recanted and said, no, I didn't really know when they were dating. So there's a lot of smoke. But at this at that point, though, you've got to look at a situation where, you're putting a judge, not Willis, but they're putting this judge in the position of, you know, do I just take you off this because I don't want anyone to be able to question it? And if I do, where do I put it in that case? I think that's even though there's innuendo, it's smoke, not fire. I think that there's a legit chance this gets moved out of Fulton County.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think you're right. And actually, the real reason, and if you laid it out just perfectly, Matt, because whether they have the proof, what they do have is the perception. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we want in every criminal case, any high-profile case like this, is you want authenticity. I mean, the argument behind this entire thing was that there was something dirty that was going on that Trump was doing and trying to overturn. It was dirty. And because of that, you think about the process that you would go through in order to prosecute him. You want that to be as clean as possible, so nobody gets to turn around and say, see, here's another example of the system trying to take down this president. And you're going to have an entire swath of America his supporters who will come around and say, you see, this is exactly what we were talking about. That's what makes it the disaster.
Jack Rice joining us. Jack, with the immunity case that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear, it seems like they're just doing Trump a favor by delaying this. They had the chance. Jack Smith asked them to pick this up in December. They turned it down. They picked it up now. Overall, your thought, do you think the Supreme Court's going to basically come out and say, yes, the presidency of the United States is beyond reproach? They can do whatever they want to as president?
Two lower courts have already rejected Trump's presidential immunity argument. Two of them. The concern here is we all can look back at Trump's statement that says, I could shoot somebody down Fifth Avenue. Remember?
Yep.
And he was talking about that. And, you know, he was always saying, oh, that's a big joke. Actually, it's not. It's actually the truth. If you think about this, if you're taking this argument that says that whatever he does, no matter what it is, no matter how far it goes, no matter how outside the bounds of legality, decency, or anything else, is immune, this guy can do anything once he holds the mantle, then what you get is that statement actually kind of being true. And what you especially get now is somebody who's going to be in his mid-80s by the time he's done. He would never be prosecuted. The fear is we have a Supreme Court that is not like anything we have ever seen. We have a Supreme Court that's been tipped to such a degree and in some cases comes across as so deferential to this former president now because he put several of them up on the court and then tipped the scales on it. And we've seen them rule over and over in ways that would be shocking in decades, in my entire lifetime, frankly. And I don't know if anybody would bet the farm on whether or not this court would actually say, no, we're not going to do that, because they very well might.
Yeah.
And remember, here's the distinction, too. Yeah. We were just talking about how Georgia, it's a state court issue, which means the president doesn't have the authority to actually get a case dismissed to overturn it. This is a federal question. And if it's a federal question, the president could simply come in and say, nope, doesn't apply, mm-hmm. and it may be done.
It is terrifying to think about this in reason because Alito and Thomas are already yes votes on this. I think we can all say that. The question comes down to the three judges that he put on the Supreme Court. Let's take a break. When we come on back, I want to talk about this New York stuff, the E. Jean Carroll and then the fraud case, because he clearly is trying to put off putting the money up that he owes, and he owes a lot of money. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us to talk about some legal issues. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. JackRiceLaw.com. JackRiceLaw.com. That gets you to Jack Rice Defense. He is the best criminal defense attorney in the state of Minnesota. You need to give him a call. He'll sit down with you and answer your questions for you in an honest, direct tone. And, yeah, by all means, get in touch with him. JackRiceLaw.com. Jack, let's go to New York. And so I need you to explain something legally to me, because in New York, and I don't know if that's the same thing here in Minnesota, or if it's the same way in Chicago, but it sounds like with these cases, with the E. Jean Carroll case and with the criminal fraud case, that if he wants to appeal, because he's been found guilty, he has been has to pay massive penalties on both sides. To make that appeal in New York, you have to basically put the money up before you can make the appeal. Is that a common practice nationwide, or is this something unique to New York?
Yes.
Yes.
No, the answer is both. And typically, when you're actually want to appeal civil judgments like this, what's required of you, you actually have to post that bond, if you will. And it's usually where you go out and you borrow the money to cover the cost of this while you're actually doing the appeal itself. So in other words, there's two really big ones right now. We're talking about the E. Jean Carroll defamation case, $83 million. But we also have the really big one, which was that fraud case out of New York for $450 million. And remember, what he was convicted of, what they concluded, was that he was overvaluing his properties so he could borrow money against them, even though those properties weren't worth it. And while at the very same time, he was undervaluing them when it came to the tax issues. Now, they didn't go after him for the tax side of this, but they certainly went after him for the other. The problem is is that to have to come up with a half a billion dollars, they estimate him to be worth multiple billions. But the problem is nobody really knows. And the way he has leveraged himself at so many levels, it's very difficult to determine whether or not he's going to be able to come up with the money. And this could create a house of cards for this guy.
Mm-hmm. In the E. Jean Carroll case on Tuesday, they basically were, for lack of a better way to say it, begging the judge to postpone them paying, that they didn't have to do this. The other thing was that he's also now today basically saying, we want a new trial. He's brought in a new legal team there. He says, I want a new trial because the other trial was fraudulent. I don't know how far he's going to get with that. But, you know, I think your point about the leveraging is important. He said he doesn't have, and a lot of people who are really wealthy just don't have piles of cash lying around like they're a Batman villain. I mean, they've got these buildings. And the fact that he can't get this money, even though he says he has it, he can't get this money because he's got to be, you know, there's got to be mortgage upon mortgage upon mortgage on some of these buildings. And yeah, I think, I mean, if he has to sell these buildings, you know as well as I do, and I don't know the legal requirements. If he owes a lot of money on those buildings, he's not going to get a lot of money for selling them. So he might end up having to sell a lot of them.
Well, when we think about how he's approached this, let's look real big picture for a second. He has called himself the king of debt. And so what he would do is he would frequently buy a property and then leverage that property. And the problem is he's had so many bankruptcies and so many problems where he slows his payments and he drags his creditors down at so many levels. Hence the reason he is actually working with Deutsche Bank, which is actually at the bottom of the heap in many, many ways. Who, by the way, has now decided they're not working with him at all anymore. And so what we have here is we have a circumstance where he doesn't just have a bunch of property. He has a bunch of property that has been leveraged at huge numbers. Understand, what he did on February 28th was on this fraud case, he actually asked the court to reduce the bond amount to $100 million because he said he might have to sell properties themselves. In fact, his lawyer said that if they didn't do this, coming up with that current total would be, quote unquote, impossible. Now, if we think about what it means is this. Think of it sort of like this. Let's imagine that he has a property that's worth $30 million. But the thing is he's gone out and he's taken a $20 million loan against that property. You would imagine that it would actually allow him to go borrow an additional 10 on it. Well, the problem is that frequently isn't true. Because what you'll get from the loan companies, from Deutsche Bank or whoever else, is that they will lend you the $20 million, but part of the contract will say you can't subordinate that additional $10 million. In other words, you can't borrow $10 more against it because that's ours.
Yeah.
If you lose it on here, we want to take the whole building for that $20 million you're not going to pay back. You don't get to go out and borrow against it. Now, imagine this happening over and over and over again. You realize what this has the potential for doing to this guy.
Yeah. One final question for you. And once again, I know your legal expertise is criminal defense. I'm not sure how much you know about this. This whole argument he's making in the fraud case where he says, well, I put a line in the contracts that says, if you trust me, you're an idiot. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what it basically said. If you trust me and my numbers, you're a fool. That's on you. You know, so this was kind of premeditated. He was doing a preemptive attempt to stop this happening. Could that come back to him criminally? Because if that was premeditated, that the whole point was knowing that he was going to try to defraud people, you know, how much can that come back? I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, the tax issue, they didn't really talk about there. Are there other potential lawsuits that could spur from this that could end up coming back and biting him again?
I mean, it's possible. They've tried to do this, and New York has been really aggressive. The AG has gotten very aggressive at this issue, but it's because they had so much to deal with. They had so many things that they could go after, and they have. They've done it very, very successfully. Yes, it's an intentional theft, and that's really the argument that you would make in a case like this, that that's exactly what it was that he was doing.
It does not sound like they're going to waver on this. So my guess in these kind of cases, I think the E. Jean Carroll case was a civil case. Technically, is there a path to appeal this up to the Supreme Court that he could basically try to get this thrown out again and or have a new trial?
It's always a fear. I mean, a part of this has to do with the outcome, meaning the money, and whether or not that was even appropriate. The other argument was always about exclusion of evidence. And especially in the fraud case, that was part of his big argument, was they excluded some of his testimony and some of the evidence in this case. But there's actually a bigger question that's out there on this whole thing they're particularly afraid of, and it's this. Is the ability for him to go find money somewhere else. Yeah. And what happens if the Saudis came up and said, you know what, we'll give you $500 million.
Oh, yeah.
He's not the president anymore. What happens when they drop a $500 million in his lap, and then when he becomes president, they say, you know what? What $500 million? We don't even remember it anymore. See, that's the fear, because I can tell you, as a former CIA case officer, and I had clearances all the way up to the top secret and SCI levels, one of the things that always you have to be concerned about is exposure and about somebody feeling compelled to do something for somebody else because they have you over a barrel. What happens if the Saudis or somebody else is willing to step up with $500 million for Donald Trump? Mm-hmm. Think about how much money the Saudis actually put forward to his son-in-law, and you realize that these things can actually happen. And that's the real fear, because remember, this question of immunity continues to sort of pile on every single decision that he makes subsequently. That's the part that makes it scary.
JackRiceLaw.com. That's JackRiceLaw.com for Jack Rice Defense over in St. Paul. Best criminal defense attorney in Minnesota. And of course, and for the folks in Chicago, watch Court TV. Find Jack Rice there. Jack, my show is better when you're on it. Thank you very much, my friend. We'll take a
break.
You bet. Take care. We'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show.